Luno, the fastest, easiest way to buy Bitcoin. If you're just getting into crypto, it's the perfect place to start. Hey guys, and welcome back to the Leah Heilpan Show. Today, we are going to be talking about the market. Bitcoin is finally back up at 46K, which is pretty insane. So I'm very excited to jump in. But before we do, this is, of course, powered by Icon Plus. They are a VC firm. It is also sponsored by BlockFi. So a huge thank you to them, because obviously without them, I wouldn't be able to have these amazing conversations. And before we jump on and bring today's guest in, a quick shout out actually to Compass Mining, because this particular episode is sponsored by them. And this is basically the company that makes Bitcoin mining accessible for everyone. All you have to do is just buy a machine, pick a hosting facility, and let them do the work. So if you want to start mining today, then just head to compassmining.io. Pretty great, given Bitcoin is very, very expensive to mine. So they make it accessible. So that is fun. All right. So today's guest is Danny Scott, the CEO of the Bitcoin exchange, Coin Corner. I've got so much going on right now. Coin Corner. Welcome, Danny. How are you doing?
Hi, Leah. I'm good, thank you. How's yourself?
Yeah, I'm good. So for those that don't know much about you, I do want to just start by giving more background before we jump into Bitcoin, because you guys are a UK exchange. This is such a US market. So tell us a little bit about you and, of course, Coin Corner.
Yep. So we are, as you mentioned there, sort of a UK focus. We're based in the Isle of Man. We've been around, founded in 2014. Primary audience market is UK, and always been the UK focus. Predominantly, again, focus on Bitcoin rather than go down the exchange route. We're more of a brokerage style Coinbase-esque company. So again, it's a massive focus on Bitcoin for us here. So we are more of the Bitcoiners, which you can see the cushion to the corner of me there. Apologies if people are walking past in the background. We are sat in our office today. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Coin Corner. We were founded back in 2014, as I mentioned there. Prior to that, I was a software developer by trade, and then come across Bitcoin through various ways, as you always do. And I think you hear about it a couple of times before you really pay attention. And started mining back in 2012, 13 times. Played around with that for a while until the electricity costs here in the Isle of Man got too expensive.
You have an interesting story. Wait, I want to hear more about that, because I know you have a really interesting story about that.
Okay.
The mining side.
We started mining, let's say, back in 2012, 13 times. It was myself and one of the co-founders of Coin Corner, and we were mining in his garage initially. So we were at first kind of just hobbyists playing around, didn't really know much about it. We had a software development company at the time, and we're both techies, both geeks, both into that side of things. So we spent probably about 2 or 3 months building up the farm and kind of getting bigger and bigger and more hardware as we was adding to it. And then it started blowing his electrics in his house, because it was in his garage. So we blew his electrics quite a few times there, and had to keep scaling back for some part. And then eventually we decided to jump into a warehouse and start mining in a warehouse. We moved out of his garage and went into a warehouse back in, I think that might have been end of 2013, 14. I can't quite remember the timings now. And then from there we scaled up to a fairly decent-ish size, but then very quickly ASICs kind of dominated the scene at that point anyway, and kind of killed off from an electric cost perspective. It just wasn't worth it to us over the time. So being both software developers by trade, we decided to pivot into the Bitcoin exchange side. There was not really much competition in the UK. It wasn't a great market. It was obviously very early days, and the on-ramp for Bitcoin exchanges in the UK was lacking. So we kind of jumped into that side, and we wanted to stay in the industry at that point because we was interested, and we kind of moved that way. Excuse me.
Yeah, no, I'm just going to say your mining story. I know we've spoken about it before, but it always blows my mind. I can't believe, you know, the electricity was just blowing and things were just, it's just crazy. Would you ever mine Bitcoin again, or are you just focused on the exchange right now?
Focused on the exchange right now, but I'd never say never. I think the mining side was certainly an easier business model. I think that was kind of, we managed to, during the mining part of the process, we managed to gain banking relationships because of what we were doing. It wasn't quite as high risk as the exchange piece. So once we pivoted to the exchange, you start seeing lots of new eventful problems that you come across, banking being probably the main one that we moved into. So yeah, maybe in the future, it's something that I keep an eye on, something that in the Isle of Man, again, the electricity costs are too expensive for the most part, but maybe if we have more the renewable, sustainable energy that we do have certain things here that do that, and we have a lot of wind farms around the island. So it's certainly an option, but it's maybe a bigger project than it can take on right now.
Yeah, I know you're doing some interesting things with the Isle, the authorities and the Isle of Man, or the government and the Isle of Man. I think that's kind of what you refer to them as. But we'll get to that. But before I do, I think what really struck me about your exchange was that you are heavily Bitcoin focused. And it's such a, it's quite a tribal market, isn't it? You know, the way people feel about different cryptocurrencies, and you've chosen to be heavily Bitcoin focused. So what does that mean for you guys, and why did you decide to do that?
A number of reasons. I think the main reason, I guess, myself and some of the other members of the team, we've always kind of, we do a lot of research into the industry, and you know, I've been around the industry quite some years now, and especially in the earlier days, we played around with creating our own coin and playing around with them sort of things. We never really launched and did anything. It was just more of a tech interest and playing around with the concept. From that point, I've always given the time of day to altcoins, as in to research and understand them and understand their bigger picture in the world and how they fit and how they're seen. But Bitcoin for me is still the de facto cryptocurrency, should we call it, and king. Bitcoin is king. But it has the long-term sustainable model, should we call it. Altcoins necessarily, most of them are not really, they're kind of focused on at various niches, if not trying to just clone Bitcoin, at which point it's just not worth, let's not go down that route at the minute. but the way I've always seen it, as Bitcoin will be the long-term one, the rest of them are still just a complete gamble in terms of their niches and whether they find a market fit, which they may do in the future, but right now it's just not there. So there was that angle of, you know, believing Bitcoin's long-term lifespan. So at which point, you know, you want to focus your business model and your business around the long term rather than the short term. The other side of that is kind of focusing on doing one thing well, and where you have all the other Bitcoin exchanges like your Binance and even Kraken and you know, even Bitstamp and the likes, they all have expanded into, they're more of a trading focused platform, where we've always tried to hit retail and keep it a bit simpler. With that in mind, they've all got trading platform-esque tools. So they've got graphs and all the numbers and all that side of things. We've stuck to a more simpler method and trying to differentiate ourselves from these guys. You know, Binance have added every coin you can think of these days. Why would we try and compete with them when we feel as well, and we believe that them the certain coins they're adding or the products they're adding, they're more of a short-term gain for a long-term loss. So we're looking at maybe a short-term loss for a long-term gain. So we're in it for the long term rather than just trying to get in, get out with various altcoins, which I think everyone kind of, I imagine everybody would agree, they're kind of pump and dump-esque style coins, which are not really long-term viable. So it was kind of, there is a number of reasons of why we've tried to focus around that and trying to build out Bitcoin's infrastructure and help with that, which is what we tried to introduce in Coin Corner, with various products built around Bitcoin. Obviously with Lightning, with the cashback and the checkout, everything is focused around Bitcoin being the core product.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a sec, because you've got the cashback, which is really cool. I actually downloaded the browser extension last week, so I need to try that. But that is really cool, because it really just, that's like a direct competitor to Lolli, right? But Lolli isn't available in the UK. So I guess just like my question is, why do you think the UK scene just isn't quite what we see in the US? Like in the US, everything is just booming, you know? They've got conferences, they've got, most of the companies that you and I speak with are all US based. Why is the UK just so behind in that sense? Like it just doesn't want to innovate, does it?
Yeah, I think there's, it does feel that way. And it does often feel that way. And even for us on the Isle of Man, we're here with very small population. And we can literally every morning from our window just over there, we can see the UK and, it's right there in front of us. So we're a stone's throw away. Even we feel distanced from the UK sometimes, even though, we kind of sit underneath it. But then obviously from the UK point, we feel distanced even further from the US because, it seems to all be happening in the US. I think a big part of it is definitely Silicon Valley style. So, Bitcoin is a tech industry and it's a growing sort of booming tech industry. And that always comes, or that's always driven from the Silicon Valley side of things. Money from the VCs is all there and there's a lot more money, a lot more skill sets, a lot more talent, should we say, around Silicon Valley or historically has been. I appreciate now there's a bit of a mass exodus from there. Tech and new, brand new booming industries always kind of drive from that side of things and move them further afield. So it certainly is always a US driven industry. And I think that's what we're seeing with Bitcoin now and the crypto side. I think obviously the US has a much bigger population, 340 million, is it? The UK has got 64 million, I think, is it around that?
Something like that.
We're kind of, when you think, put things like that into perspective, it kind of makes sense that it feels like there's more people over there involved. There is more people, but the percentage wise, I'm not sure of the portions. It's probably true. The UK was at about 4%, I think, are we now, of UK people, population that own Bitcoin. And I think the US is at something like, is it 16% or something?
Yeah, there you go.
I remember their stat. They're a little bit more advanced and ahead of us. As are some other countries, but then obviously other countries are way behind. It's definitely the UK would like to drive more products, as you're saying there, like Lolli in the US with the cashback. They were kind of first movers. I'm not too sure if there's many other competitors there on that particular product at the minute. But again, the UK, we were, I think, first, if not, I think there was one other, but I'm not too sure if they're still running the kind of a one-man band. And it is early days and we're trying to drive the market by bringing these products and introducing these products, which hopefully we can do over time, which takes a long time. It takes time to build and drive these products. Whereas I think the industry feels like it moves really quick when you've had altcoins, ICOs, NFTs, all of these things, they come and go very quickly and it feels like such a fast paced industry, and it is, but then the real sort of substance products, like even the cashback side, there's a real substance to that. There is already cashback companies in the UK and the US that are not Bitcoin related, but they do the same product effectively, but give you GBP or US dollar back. And there's a real substance there and a real market. But that will take time to grow and people to adopt it.
I think like what concerns me is all the hostility towards Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies at large, really. I know the US obviously have the infrastructure bill right now, which they're dealing with, which is a big deal. And the UK has gone pretty hard on cryptocurrency regulation. I know the FCA, which for those who aren't English, that's our Financial Conduct Authority. They have started, I think it's an £11 million campaign to warn people about cryptocurrency. I mean, for me, that money would be much better spent on financial literacy, but that's another topic. So why do you think they're going so hard on it? Do you think this poses a threat to anything? Let's talk about like Binance as an example. They've now had their payments blocked from HSBC, NatWest, Barclays. Those are three major banks. Have you guys faced any issues like that?
Yep. I guess coming back to the US thing, I'll come back to the bank piece in a minute, but the US with the infrastructure bill, being trying to keep up to date with that, it's US politics and it's absolute chaos. It's for me highlighting to the world a little bit how US politics is done and how these bills are introduced is just not right. There's something fundamentally wrong with the system of how they do that. There seem to have been, obviously, there's massive kickoff about the crypto side of things there and trying to get that part of the bill through, or the bill as a whole through, but getting held up because of this. As far as I'm aware, this bill has been being held up because of the crypto side. So there's a big pushback there. Within this infrastructure bill, there's lots of other industries in there, but maybe, you know, they're not as affected by it, or maybe they just mm-hmm. don't have that community there that'll push back and delay the bill like it has done. For me, I don't understand why they don't just define broker. You know, it's all come down to this one definition of the broker. They need to just define broker as a Bitcoin exchange, effectively somewhere where you can trade cryptocurrency for a fiat currency, and that's the definition done. And the rest of the, if they want to come back later and catch, you know, they can't really catch miners and node people running nodes and things, but, you know, if they want to try and look to that, or even the DeFi side, come back to that in time and make them amendments, rather than the other way around, which they've gone the other way around by the looks of it at the minute. So yeah, it's just,
is that incompetence though, in your opinion, or is that like actual genuine disliking towards it?
I don't know how much of a conspiracy hat I need to wear today. I'm not sure. I think they've certainly, I don't want to call them people. It's easy to call somebody incompetent from the outside and not look and sit in their position of what they're doing. Not defending them in any way whatsoever, because what they've done is terrible. But they, you know, for something like that, they should have already reached out to the industry experts or the industry as a whole and gathered feedback before they introduce it to the bill, which they haven't done. So that, you know, they should be doing that and taking the advice, and not just, you know, the advice is being given now by the industry, but they're mm-hmm. still just ignoring it and trying to get the bill through. Now that's part of, they want to get the bill through as quick as they can because of X, Y, and Z, other external reasons outside of our industry. So it's kind of like that is politics in the US. So it's hard to comment on whether that's incompetence or whether that's rushing something through, or on the other side of it, are they trying to attack the industry and attack? Maybe a little, maybe not. I don't feel like they're trying to attack Bitcoin. I'm trying to be careful what I say here.
It's okay. Take your time. I won't hold you to anything.
I don't think they're trying to attack Bitcoin as such. And, exchanges, miners, things like that. I think maybe you could argue that they're trying to attack more of the DeFi side of things, where they may start to realize that they can't control certain areas of that. Although I appreciate most of the DeFi these days, if not all, is pretty much centralized in some manner. So there's always a central point of choke that they can go to if need be. But yeah, maybe that's an angle for them. They can't figure out how to regulate DeFi. So, you know, put a tax bill around it and require anybody involved in DeFi to report to the IRS, meaning that it'll probably scare most people off because they won't want to have to deal with that and the consequence of not reporting them things. So could be a tactical move in that respect. I kind of don't really know enough about US politics maybe to understand if this is normal or this is out of the ordinary. So yeah, wait and see, I guess. I can't imagine the UK and the following on, coming back to the UK. Yeah. I can't really imagine the UK at the minute particularly starting to look to introduce something like this. I appreciate that there will be tax reporting requirements for Bitcoin exchanges at some point down the line to HMRC, which I'm sure that'll come. I appreciate that HMRC already reached out, was that last year or the year before, to a lot of the UK exchanges asking them to report their clients. But it was, again, it's not a requirement at the minute. That will come in time, I'm sure. But at the minute, they're just, I think the UK playing a bit of catch up with the regulatory perspective. We've got the crypto register coming, or here for some part. And then I'm sure we can see eventually. So the crypto register just gives kind of an oversight of AML on crypto businesses. It isn't effectively regulated. So you're just registered with the FCA rather than regulated by the FCA. So eventually I imagine they'll slowly migrate that into a regulated by the FCA, which means they can, you know, come and spot check you whenever they feel like it, and have more of an oversight into your operations. So that will come in time, but I think at the minute, this is just a stepping stone for them to kind of gather them crypto businesses into one and try and, weed out the bad players, I guess.
I think people know, like, the, you know, authorities, governments, central banks know the threat that Bitcoin poses and the industry as a whole poses. And I feel that they don't like it. So for me, I do feel that it is somewhat intentional. Did you see the news about the EU wanting to eventually ban anonymous cryptocurrency addresses?
Yeah.
I mean, number, is that possible? I mean, what's up? What's going on with that?
That was the wallet one, wasn't it? They were trying to effectively, it's kind of all based up. So FATFA, which is the global financial authority, should we call it, they're the guys that try and come at a global perspective for the financial world and try and dictate to FATFA registered countries, which most of the world or a lot of the world is or fall under FATFA. FATFA don't make laws or rules, but they kind of dictate what the world should do, and they'll put you know, they create a guidance, should we call it, and they put guidance in place to say, right, you need to act and do these things, and then it's for the countries to actually follow FATFA's guidelines and introduce them into law and regulation. But what we've seen obviously over the last couple of years with FATFA is they are trying to push certain cryptocurrency guidance out there, and part of that guidance was something called the travel rule. And you know, these are still going on in the background, this is still happening. But part of the travel rule was effectively meaning that if a Bitcoin transaction left, say, Coin Corner, and it was going to Coinbase, for example, we would need to know it's going to Coinbase, and we would need to pass the information over to Coinbase of who this customer is that's done the withdrawal from Coin Corner to Coinbase, and let them know that it's, you know, Joe Bloggs has sent 0.2 Bitcoins to you guys, and they'd confirm receipt and backwards and forwards. So if vice versa, from Coinbase to Coin Corner, do the same thing. There's nothing out there at the minute technically that makes that possible. So there is people trying to build software that'll be middle tiers that'll kind of allow that and make that transaction happen. You know, there is opportunities for things like Lightning, where Lightning, you can create you create an invoice and you can create and attach a message to it. So theoretically, if somebody sends Lightning payment from Coin Corner to Coinbase, then we would be able to pass Coinbase would be able to display that this is a Coinbase Lightning invoice, and we would know it is. So then we could pass the customer's information across in the Lightning invoice to them as well. So it could be vice versa. So there is certain things in there that are slowly coming from a technological perspective, but they are still years away and getting all the exchanges up to scratch and integrated. Coming back to what you were talking about there, sorry, on the EU regulation with wallets and trying to ban private wallets and that side, that kind of came off a little bit of the back of the fact for the travel rule and trying to, it's not like they're trying to ban Bitcoin and ban personal wallets. It's that they're trying to help close the loop a little bit, should we call it, in terms of making sure that when we send, so a customer of ours sends Bitcoin out of our system, we know whether it's going to their personal wallet or whether it's going to another exchange. So we can make sure, it's kind of like how the banking world works, I guess, at the minute. And when you send a banking transaction, it goes to another bank, and you know there's a system in place there to pass the information of who it's going to and where it's coming from and so on. So they're just trying to wrap something, I guess, the legacy regulation around crypto at the minute. And that's kind of the battle, I guess, where we're at or in, and trying to figure out, you know, how do we, I would love to be the whole, you know, we don't need that side of the regulation, and we don't need them sort of rules around us, and we don't need FATFA to be dictating X, Y, and Z, which, you know, yeah, on some part, no, we don't. But at the same time, it's going to come. So it's going to happen regardless of what we want and whether we want it. So we need to make sure we're meeting in the middle, which is similar to this infrastructure bill in the US. It's happening regardless of whether people want it or not. So you need to sort of, that's the part of the lobbying there and trying to communicate with the regulators. And you have to make them see sense for some of it and find a happy medium in between. So yeah, the EU side, then they were never looking to ban private wallets. It was more of a stepping stone towards maybe the travel rule side of things and the FATFA rules that are looking to come in. We saw Netherlands about a year ago, they introduced the law, basically they introduced that same thing, which was the travel rule. So Dutch exchanges could If you were looking to, one of their customers was trying to withdraw Bitcoin, if it was going to their private wallet, they had to provide like a screenshot of evidence of where it was going to. And so they then did take that to court, and they won their court battle, I think back in March, it might have been this year, which then has allowed them to scrap that off now, because it just wasn't workable for the companies, and it stifles innovation, which is exactly what it's done. Yeah, and we went through the crazy thing. I was talking to a couple of the guys from the US side and from the Dutch side when this was all happening, because it's happened in the US as well. There was talk of that back in November, I think, last year, with a similar rule. And we actually had this exact same thing in the Isle of Man back in 2016, I think it was. And we worked with the regulators here and explained everything, showed them, you know, we actually integrated a automated process for a customer. When they wanted to withdraw their Bitcoin, they had to sign, and it was going to a personal wallet, they had to sign a transaction on the they had to sign a message on their address to prove that they had the ownership of that address. So we automated that in our system and did it. Wow. as a trial, not because we wanted to, it's because the regulators were asking us to somehow enforce it, and we showed them, look, you can do something like this on chain, and we brought that in. We trialed it for like a month or two period, and then we gathered all information from that to show, you know, how much this was affecting customers and our business and everything. Went back to the regulator and said, look, you're stifling innovation for us here and creativity. So if you're going to continue to do that, we're going to move and we're going to go elsewhere. So at that point, you know, they were happy to drop it. We tried it. We proved it just didn't work and it would have killed the business. And they allowed us to open or remove that rule and carry on as the rest of the world was. So I think that was definitely, that's a lesson for, I think the US at the minute as well, if the US continue with the infrastructure bill and don't make amendments, the infrastructure bill doesn't come into play until 2023. Gets passed. But obviously there can be amendments made from now until then that they'll hopefully try and get through. But if they don't get any through, then they're going to see a mass exodus of companies, individuals leaving the US to go elsewhere to develop. Because it won't make Bitcoin illegal, but it makes effectively
everything around it difficult.
It's just not worth it to the individual to, and if they want to continue working on it or continue working at the company or DeFi or software side, they're going to move and go to another country that is friendly to crypto. It's at the detriment to the US in introducing this rule.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that's the thing, because cryptocurrency is inevitable to me. Bitcoin is inevitable. This entire decentralized space is inevitable. You know, even if we're talking about like decentralized applications, you know, just even down to that. And surely the US would want to be at the forefront of it, you know, like they're at the forefront of everything. But that's a really interesting story, actually, you know, that you went back to the regulators and you said, look, this is just not practical. And they were happy to let that go. I think that's actually pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think it's kind of is communicating with them and showing them the real world example. Like we had to trial it for a couple of months to prove that, you know, this would have killed the business. And unfortunately we had to do that at the time, and it did stifle it and slow it down. And the amount of customer support issues that people were having, they didn't understand it. It was new technology. It just didn't work. And I think even today, that same process would still struggle to work. So it's certainly, there's lots of work to do. It is just education. The industry as a whole is new, technology is new, and regulators are not experts at these things, and they need the help just as much as everybody else does, as long as they're willing to accept the help and the advice to take on and hopefully introduce that in a workable manner for all the companies and individuals around.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just speaking of they need help and things like that, I think it was Elizabeth Warren that sort of used Bitcoin and Doge in the same sentence. You know, and I love a bit of Doge. Like, I find it so funny. Like, it, you know, it's just funny, but you just can't compare the two, you know?
We launched Coin Corner back in 2014 with Dogecoin.
Did you?
Yeah, we had Bitcoin, Litecoin, Dogecoin, I think it was. But that was because, you know, it just launched. It was the popular thing at that time, and we were just launching, and you kind of just go with that. And it was early days, but yeah, it's brilliant. You can't, it's just not a fair comparison of the two.
Given all of this, the infrastructure bill, we've got the FCA in the UK cracking down on cryptocurrency exchanges, the infrastructure bill, like I said, despite all of this, Bitcoin is moving, which is so exciting. I think right now I'm looking on Binance and it's at $45,900. So it's just under 46K. Very exciting. So I want to get your thoughts on the markets. You know, we had that crash. Everybody thought that was it. China won. Put it as bluntly as that. Do you think we're getting it? Is this the second wave? Is this the second wave of the bull market? What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's, I've kind of been hinting at it on Twitter for a while with, I think some of the guys that are doing the on-chain analysis side. Is really good comparisons. I think for the most part, most of it kind of correlates and lines up with the history of the historic 2013 and 2017 sort of runs. You see a bit of a rise. We have a bit of downtime and accumulation period, and then we start to go again for a second part of the bull run. The bull run generally lasting for, you know, between 12 to 18 months time periods, with the real spike probably, if history is to go from, it would, you know, be coming sort of again November, December time, similar sort of time periods this year. So I can imagine at the minute, the way we're seeing it from history, then yes, second spike looks like it'd be coming, or the second run looks like it'd be coming, and heading any time now from towards the end of the year, really, for a sort of bull run high. So yes, surely, I'm trying not to, can't give investment advice.
I haven't asked you.
as generic as possible here. So yeah, I think that's definitely coming. The one difference at the minute from 2017 and 2013 that we're seeing today is the Bitcoin leaving exchanges. So right. The Bitcoin actually on the exchanges has been in a downward trend now for, I think it's coming up to nearly 2 years, 18 months towards 2 years now. That is always a metric that people do pay attention to and keep an eye on. And that's effectively meaning people are buying Bitcoin on the exchange, withdrawing it to their cold storage or withdrawing it to their personal wallets elsewhere. With that downward trend, we've never seen that in 11 years of Bitcoin's life, and this is the first time this is happening. I appreciate there's arguments to say, well, you know, there's more Bitcoin in circulation now, which is why we're going on the downward trend, there's better infrastructure in terms of cold storage devices and things like that, which are more user-friendly, so people don't have to hold it on exchanges, and they can withdraw it and keep it in a user-friendly manner. So there is counter arguments to certain things there, but I think generally this downward trend that we're seeing will create a lack of liquidity on the exchanges in terms of trading. So when we talk about I sometimes put this out on Twitter, and then you get a lot of people asking, you know, what does this mean? So the lack of liquidity on exchanges as it's coming off, as the price starts to move again, and it's moving quickly, there's not enough depth to hold up certain ranges. So all of a sudden you may see massive movements, which we have already seen this year. We saw big, you know, I think one day was, did we have a 10K day? I think one day, $10,000 movement in day. You know, that historically was, I think we had one day which was
back a few months ago, right?
Yeah. It could have been after the Elon gate.
The Elon candle, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was due to that. But that was like, you know, the year before, we weren't even at $10,000. Now we're $10,000 movements in a day. So, you know, this is natural and this will happen. And you know, going forwards, $10,000 movements in a day might start to become more natural. You know, if we're at $200,000 Bitcoin, then $10,000 in a day is insignificant compared to where we are now. So
on that point, I have to ask you then, because people always talk about this, and I get this a lot on TikTok, because I'm always like pushing Bitcoin on TikTok, obviously. And people are always saying to me, what kind of currency is that, right? If it can move 10 grand in a day, what kind of currency is that? What do you say to that?
It depends on the value of the currency at the time, I guess. If Bitcoin's worth $1 million and it moves $10,000 a day, it's tiny, it's negligible movement, it's nothing. So I appreciate at the minute it's less for me, would focus on the percentage movement rather than the value movement. The percentage movement is still big, especially when on the 10,000 day, you know, it was a 22% or whatever it was movement. I can't remember the figure. So that is still a big movement for a currency. And I think people need to appreciate at the minute, Bitcoin is still in its infancy and it's in I guess the way I see it, a lot of people see that is Bitcoin initially was, you know, this experimental technology, and it kind of grew eventually into a speculative asset as kind of where we're going to now, and an investment. Eventually, obviously, we're moving now. People are treating it as a store of value, a long-term savings angle. And then eventually, longer term, it'll start to become, as the volatility reduces, it will start to become more of a usable currency at that level. You know, currencies are volatile every single day around the world. They're trading backwards, US dollar to GBP, to euro, everything else. They're all moving, and they're still volatile between themselves. It's just that, I guess, the country you're in, if you're UK, you're using GBP. You're not paying attention to GBP against the dollar or the euro or anything like that, because it doesn't affect your everyday life. Whereas with Bitcoin, you are comparing it because it's a new currency. So there's a slight different mentality, I guess, you have to look at and think about when you're talking about the currency movements and prices. A simple question to back to some of them might be, okay, so what did the pound move against the dollar today then, if you think Bitcoin's volatile? And nobody has a clue because they don't really pay attention to that. But it does move.
Do you know? But just, do you know?
No idea.
Okay, no idea. Because who cares?
It's much smaller percentage movements than Bitcoin is right now. That's because there's markets in place and world global economies that have been around now for however many decades, centuries, and they've created some sort of stability in the markets. Yeah. And that will happen with Bitcoin over time, but we're still early and it will take time for that to happen. There's no short answer to that question, I think. It's quite a long-winded answer, I think, for the most part.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think, you know, ultimately we have to appreciate that it is only a 12-year-old asset and give it time. Everything, you know, I look at it like a baby. Like, babies are volatile. Babies are screaming. Babies are crying. Doesn't mean they're not going to grow up to be excellent things, you know? Still exactly. Doing excellent things right now. That's the way I look at it. But this bull market is interesting because, you know, when we saw El Salvador, for example, recognize Bitcoin as legal tender, that's when Bitcoin was low. And there was a lot of bullish news coming out, and it still didn't manage to drive up the price. Now it's just sort of going. I wouldn't say anything is necessarily sparked it. I would say this is the most bearish from a, let's say, like a sentiment and kind of like a new standpoint. This is the most bearish time that we're in, given all this regulation and all this uncertainty. And yet it's the price is going. So what would you say is driving the price right now?
All the things you've just mentioned there with the El Salvador.
Okay. Delayed reaction.
Delayed reaction. Yeah. That's the momentum takes time for momentum to build up. And we've seen that over even 2020, you know, we had from the financial crash back in March 2020. We then had the halving, and then we had this build up through the whole of 2020 of the price slowly grinding up, the sentiment changing towards Bitcoin. That takes time, and we got to a stage where we got towards the end of the year at 29,000, I think we were. And then the new year came and it started to really ramp up and started to move. And then obviously we have the spike and we die down again, and we're back to then accumulation period, momentum building. The good news is still coming, but it takes time for, you know, I think we pay attention to the industry far more than most people out there in the world. So, you know, we're living it day in, day out. So when we see this news, we're like, why is nobody reacting to it? But, you know, then go outside our bubble and talk to people, and sometimes, you know, they're like, they're not even aware of like Elon Musk accepting or Tesla accepting Bitcoin, and they're not aware of them things until you start telling people. Even the PayPal news of PayPal now having Bitcoin on the platform, you know, people outside of the industry still don't even know that, and they're not aware of that. So these things do take time, and the momentum and the positivity and the positive momentum there takes time to build up. So I think there's combinations of a variety of things, that the momentum there from the external, the retail market, the world. There's accumulation phases that obviously we're going through, the mining, the halving still from just 15
still,
months away.
Still, you think, still.
It's all going to take effect. So usually again, going back from history, so don't take my word for this one. But if you look back in history and 2013, 2017 and the halving during them time periods and the bull markets, it takes between, I think it's 12 to, is it 15, maybe about 15 months on average or around 15 months to go from when the halving was to the next cycle's all-time high. So you would imagine then the next all-time high comes for us around September, October, which is what this I'm saying year. Now, which is, yeah, this year. Because that's kind of like 15 months to 18 months after the halving. So the halving takes time to kick in and the effect to happen. So there's a combination of so many things, I think, around the world. We've got regulation slowly coming in. We've got the likes of PayPal. You've got banks getting involved. You've got everybody now. You've got funds, ETFs are starting to hopefully sort of break a little bit of movement there in the US as well. And I know further afield, we've already started to see ETFs popping up. All that side of things is will naturally start to move the price, but they take time, and they will take time. You can see the ETFs in the US have been trying to get through for three, four years now, I think it is. Yeah. Still haven't got the first one through, but you know, there is movement. So yeah, it takes time, and it's a slow long-term look or view of the world rather than the short-term trying to hope it's going to go to $200,000 next week. You know, you've got to take a long-term strategy of these things. Appreciating everybody wants to do that, and everyone wants to make a quick buck in that angle, which is a completely different argument or view of it. So yeah, give it time. I think we'll be getting there.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, it's just constantly more and more news, you know, and more bullish news, which would, you know, really give the industry more credit. And, you know, with incredible players like PayPal, you know, Tesla, and all these players, it really gives the industry so much more credibility, especially when you're trying to speak to people outside of our bubble, as you put it. But what's always really interesting to me is that is the tribalism, but I won't get into that really. It's more just like where we are going and what, let's just say, the internet in general is going to be built on. Because some people say Bitcoin, some people say Ethereum, and there's that real kind of divide between the two. I know that you are quite the, I don't want to say you're, okay, I'm not going to call you anything, but I know you lean more towards the Bitcoin side of things. Call me what you want. I'm being polite. I'm being nice. No, I'm joking. Look, like, I think, you know, you lean towards the Bitcoin side of things. So from your opinion, do you really think that what is being built on ETH, right? Like DeFi, dApps, all of this stuff, because that stuff is inevitable. That's coming. Will it really be built on Bitcoin? Can it be?
I think that there's so many different arguments. For me, as I've talked about earlier on, with Bitcoin being the focus, you know, I'm trying to focus on Bitcoin, sound money, and trying to create the future of where I see Bitcoin going there. Ethereum was created to be a completely different product and different. A different niche, a different market. So they're going after a completely different industry. However, they have tried to pivot a number of times, and now they're trying to call themselves Ultrasound Money, I think was the latest one.
Oh, I didn't see that. That's cheeky. I didn't see that one.
But, you know, they've changed their monetary policy a number of times over the years due to they think it should change to the X, Y, and Z, and they're just automatically changing it. You know, Bitcoin has never been changed, and that's, for me, the solid foundation of what you're building on. So building products on a solid foundation is required, and having the not necessarily even just the security aspects of it, but you know, the in terms of mining and hash rates, but in terms of you're building on something that, you know, is so ingrained into the community, into the world, that, you know, 21 million bitcoins is never going to change, and that's it. And the mining and the new Bitcoin coming in circulation is never going to change, and you know that monetary policy, you know how it's coming out. Whereas with other coins and Ethereum and so on, you know, because they've chopped and changed and they move around, it becomes difficult to, for me, I wouldn't be building my business and my business model on top of something that could change at the drop of a hat because one guy says so. So it doesn't make sense from a business model perspective or a long-term business model perspective to build on them platforms like Ethereum and so on just yet. A lot of what we're seeing on Ethereum is, research, R&D, trial and error. People are trying various things. We've had CryptoKitties back in 2017, I think that was. We've had obviously the NFTs. We've got all the DeFi, but you're seeing all the rug pulls, as people call it, with various things. Once, you know, it's becoming Ethereum was as whatever's hot topic.
It's the Wild West.
Building, yeah, they are building on Ethereum, the hot topic side of it. So the tokens was initially the sort of thing. And then obviously moving on to the crypto kitties and the games and things, and that crashed the network, and it can't scale in the way that it needs to create these things. I'm trying not to go into too much detail here. I'm trying to stay high level, but the short of it, I think for me, with Ethereum, I'm trying not to abuse anyone building things, because there's lots of genuine people out there building the products or trying to build products, and do appreciate that. But there's also a lot of, like you say, they're the Wild West, where people are building for a short-term gain on something that they know has not really got long-term viability, but they build it anyway to throw it out there, have a pre-mine of whatever, and run away with some money. Bitcoin, because people are not doing that and people are building genuine sustainable products and real world use cases, should we call it, they don't have the budget and the market money. They haven't done an ICO and they haven't done these things, so they don't have that marketing budget to go and sell to the public. So the public, with the Ethereum tokens and so on, you've got this ICO money and you go in and raise X amount, X, Y, and Z. I mean, we've seen history, 99% of ICOs now are dead, I think.
Okay, wow, I didn't know that.
I think it was NASA, 99 point something percent of ICOs now are all shut down. Don't quote me on that.
I won't.
Yeah, just Google it and clarify. But it is a big percentage. So you can see that, you know, they've raised money, they've thrown marketing out there, people have come in, the founders have probably done very well for themselves, and the project shut down and disappear. You know, that happens in the real world and business and everything as well, but this was a little bit more Wild West than that, I guess. Whereas with Bitcoin, people are building, obviously, with Lightning and even Liquid, and you see them Impervious at layer three now, and you've got the sort of Sphinx chat and things. You know, people are building them things without even, most of the world don't seem to realize, but, you know, that's where, for me, the real innovation is happening, and people are creating real world products and real world use cases, like Lightning now being able to be used for El Salvador. Without Lightning being there, then El Salvador would have never adopted it. But without Bitcoin being the strong foundation that it is, with the hash rates and the long-term sustainability, trustability of the code base, and not changing monetary policy and things, that is what gives El Salvador comfort that they can use Lightning built on top of Bitcoin and drive that way. So yeah, if I was going to build any form of layers, whether that's DeFi or any other layers on top of one of these, I would be looking at a long-term, personally, I would be looking at a long-term strategy, and for the business model that I'm looking to create. And for me, that would be building it on Bitcoin. Yeah.
I understand. I think for me personally, everything is so new, so I'm yet to see how everything plays out. I definitely have an open mind about everything. But I hear you. And you know, you mentioned El Salvador there, and that just sort of sparks my brain a bit about, again, just regulations and all the hostility towards it, and just makes me laugh, really. You know, like, a country have tried to do something really incredible for themselves. You know, if you look on Google and it says what's their currency, it says US dollar and Bitcoin. Yeah, they've got so much hostility. So I know obviously we're tight for time now, but like, just want to get your thoughts, really. Why do you think they received so much hostility?
El Salvador,
the IMF, like,
I don't know, from the IMF and that side, I guess that would be expected. That's a US perspective. El Salvador use their currency as their primary currency. And then anything, like, they're looking to move to Bitcoin from the US dollar, or they've introduced Bitcoin alongside the US dollar, that threatens the US dollar, and that threatens the US power and their control. So they're going to get, it was inevitable that they would get the backlash from the US and even the IMF. And I'm sure other places will give them a kick along the way as well. And that's something that they're going to have to deal with, and then they will have known that from day one when they set out to do that. I know there was a little bit, small parts of backlash, I think, from public. I saw some of the, was it in El Salvador, they were protesting, I think, to not have Bitcoin as their currency.
Really? I didn't see that.
I think there was, it was made out to be something more than I think it was, because there was only, okay, I think there was a picture of a couple of people doing it, and then I think somebody took a picture further back, and there was, like, you know, 15 people actually protesting, not like thousands. Okay. That was made out. So I don't think it was much more than that. But yeah, it's change, it's new.
Something that
the world disappeared.
I'm still here, My camera shuts off after 20 minutes. I don't know why it does that.
Yeah, it's something new, something that the world's trying to get to grips with, and the public are trying to get to grips with. The media is still spinning things about, you know, negative conceptions of Bitcoin, of criminal activity and money laundering, and it's anonymous and all these sort of things. So with all that in mind, you know, the public outside of our industry are seeing mainstream media talking about these things and talking about the negative side of Bitcoin and, you know, the energy usage and all these things. So without the public really going off and doing their own education on it and their own learning, they are just going to take in what they're seeing in the media, and they're going to take that perception of Bitcoin, of what that is, and they're going to spin that, and they're going to go and protest because they've seen that it, you know, pollutes the earth and destroys, boils the oceans and so on, which obviously we know is not true, but media unfortunately help drive that, and I think that's just the way it is. And it's going to be the way it is with any new technology or any new movements, especially in financial side.
Yeah, and especially with something which poses such an inherent threat. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day about Donald Trump, because apparently he might run for president again in 2024. And, you know, he's supposedly anti-Bitcoin. Have you not heard that? Apparently. I don't think he's announced it, but I think there was just like a conversation that he could run. And I was like, well, that's quite exciting. For many reasons, but anyway, so apparently people say, oh no, we wouldn't want him because he's not good for Bitcoin. But I don't think that it's like he's not good for Bitcoin. I just think he's like a US dollar maximalist, and they understand the threat that it poses.
I think there's a documentary I just flagged up to the team actually to watch, the petrodollar documentary or something.
I've heard of it. Yeah,
it's only I don't know who's done it. I think someone in our industry has actually created it, but I was gonna go have a watch of that tonight at some point. It's only 30 minutes long, so it's not too bad, but yeah, I'm imagining that's gonna highlight a lot of that side of how the US dollar has its dominance and the war side and oil and everything else. So yeah, be interesting watch maybe.
Yeah, 100%. I'll check that out. But just finally, I'd love to hear your opinion on where you see the space in 5 years. And I say 5 years because 5 years isn't that far away. Bitcoin's guaranteed to be booming, in my opinion. But, you know, what's the next hype? But like, we've had DeFi, we've had NFTs. You know, this year we've had institutional investors jumping in and, you know, countries making it legal tender. What's like the crux of in 5 years' time? What can you imagine?
Anyone's guess these days.
Anyone's guess.
I think from an industry perspective, it's difficult to say. Obviously, we've seen with the NFTs and the ICOs and the altcoins and tokens and, you know, all that sort of the DeFi side and so on. That is potentially literally anyone's guess. I know the roadmap, we call it, of like Ethereum. You know, they're trying to bring a lot of the financial world onto the platform as such there, which, you know, maybe that'll happen. We'll see how that goes. With the Bitcoin side, a big part of going forwards for me and my focus going forwards over these next 5 years is the layers kind of built on top of Bitcoin, which we're seeing. So your layer twos with Lightning and starting to introduce Lightning into more of a real world environments and use cases, whether that's just for payments, whether that's the Sphinx chat is a great example one. So like, you know, everyone's got WhatsApp.
What is that? Explain that to me.
The Sphinx chat is it's like WhatsApp or Telegram, but it's every message you send somebody is a Lightning transaction. So it means that it's encrypted end to end. So there's only you and the recipient that can read that message. So it's kind of like a decentralized WhatsApp chat.
Built on Bitcoin.
Yeah. It's using all the Lightning invoice payments to actually communicate and transact and talk to each other. So that's like one of the first examples of that side. We've seen the TLV, which was a kind of an example thing from Joost Jaeger, I think it's called. So he was, again, Lightning kind of developer, and he created TLV Shop, which was a website, but all of the payments and the products and everything and your user account was kind of controlled and transacted via Lightning. So you wanted to buy a product on the website, You mm-hmm. scan the QR code for the to make the payment via Lightning, and when you make that payment in the invoice, in the message that you're sending across to the shop, you include your name and your address and all the details. So it means that your email address or your password, nothing like that, needs to be saved on within the website and with the e-commerce company. You don't even need to store your delivery address, because all that's in the Lightning invoice and goes across to them, which can obviously later be deleted and so on. But that starts to remove away, obviously, credit cards, and cards are a mass use online on online shops and paying, and they're obviously rife for fraud and credit card fraud and things. So people get cards stolen, websites get compromised, and your details are leaked. So it's starting to effectively move away what we call PCI compliance in the card world. So that's every website that accepts cards theoretically has to be PCI compliant and go through all these checks. If you don't accept credit cards, but you just have Bitcoin Lightning payments and so on, then you can move the PCI compliance aspects away from your company. So you don't need to even deal with that side of it. So I think over the next 5 years, we're going to start to see various sectors or various products and features being slowly disrupted by Lightning and the layer twos, and hopefully the layer threes as well coming soon, which layer three is kind of still under wraps for the most part, but there's quite a few little projects now starting to pop up, which is really interesting. When I say layer three, that's just built on top of Lightning. Mm-hmm. So you've got Bitcoin, your layer one, Lightning, your layer two, and then you've got layer three, which is built on top of Lightning, which will start to appear very soon.
Oh, I think it's so exciting. I, for one, really hope we see more Lightning adoption, more education about Lightning, because more people just need to be using it to make the whole experience so much easier, instant, feeless almost. And I think that will change the narrative around Bitcoin so much more, especially because a lot of the criticism is often, you know, that it can't scale. I feel Lightning needs to prove itself on a large scale to kind of shut that down.
Hopefully El Salvador does that for Lightning and proves that, you know, it works at a scale. So fingers crossed that all goes smoothly. We'll see.
El Salvador is a test. I mean, it is a test, you know, that's what it is, isn't it? Finally, Danny, what are the new updates we can expect with Coin Corner? You know, where can people find you? Just plug yourself.
Shamelessly plug ourselves. Coincorner.com. We are on Twitter as well. A lot of the teams on Twitter, Coin Corner Danny, you got Molly, Zach, Dave, everyone else on there. New side of things coming from Coin Corner this year. We do have cards coming soon.
Oh, cards!
Eventually, we're still in progress with them. So they should be coming soon. We have hopefully a new app. I'll say hopefully we do have a new app coming soon as well. The app's we do have an app at the minute, but in need of a rehaul. And I think one of the big things, again, we're continuing to focus on the Bitcoin side, and the cashback and the auto buys and things like that. The features we already have, we're starting to try and help, I guess, make them more user-friendly and help onboard people that, like yourself, trying the cashback out. Is something that a lot of the world don't seem to know we've got there still, and it's trying to kind of push that out and help show people what we have in a nice, easy cashback. Absolutely great for do your shopping online, get Bitcoin back for percentage of whatever you shop, and obviously that's just over time adding, and it's like a savings account effectively for a long-term strategy. So DCA and while shopping.
DCA and more shopping. I love that. I'm so excited about the cards. I love a good crypto card. Like, I have too many. I love them all. And they're all just slightly different, you know, whether it's earning interest or if it's cash back or, you know, they're all really cool. But yeah, I want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been really, really interesting learning more about, you know, what you guys are up to and just getting your perspective on the markets right now, because you know, it's a confusing time. Some people say they know what's going on. Some people have no idea. So it's always good to understand more.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I said this the other day. I was like, do you know what? If somebody tells me that they actually know, I don't believe them. Don't believe them. Yeah, literally.
Thank you for having me on there. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much to my sponsors, Block by Luno and Compass Mining, and of course, Icon Plus Capital. Guys, don't forget to tune in next week for another brilliant guest. We'll see you then. Bye.